Hey, welcome back to the Antoinettes. We have a really special show in store this week because it is our first live show. We are at the Racial Justice Centre. We have so much fun on stage, and you can also hear it's not just you that thinks we're awesome because the audience was laughing hysterically. And Azura was such a show off, high fiving herself each time that they laughed more at her than they did me.
Yeah, listen, if you are not going to clap for yourself, it's like they always say, clap for yourself. When you're on a live broadcast with your co-host's friend.
And honestly, what could go wrong? We decided to laugh as we talked about terrorism.
As it was.
We did. It was fantastic. So we hope you enjoy it. Do stick around at the end because we will give you an update on Azur, service dog Bella. And we also heard so many of your experiences of traveling with a disability. And we're going to play some of those through. Enjoy terrorism. Enjoy the laughter.
And the thank you.
I rendered you speechless.
You might have. It's when you said enjoy terrorism. I'm just kidding. I don't know what to do with you. Help me.
Hello, hello. We have a special live episode of the Antoinettes for you today. And that's the show where two smart asses tackle a new problem each week. And we're recording on Gadigal land, on land that was never ceded.
For our regular listeners, it's me, your favorite Antoinette, here. And you guys know the drill. Nothing's off the table. We won't always break bread.
The more modest Antoinette over here. The Antoinettes love a bit of tension. We enjoy the art of disagreement, and we're here to challenge the status quo and at the same time challenge our friendship.
So, with that said, welcome to the shit show.
Allow me to introduce my co-host. It's one of my favourite parts because you just have to sit there and be quiet and I get to call you whatever I like. No, you are a wonderful friend, a poet, an actress, a TED speaker, not TEDx. I've said TEDx before. She's like, no, the real TED. Just because I have done a TEDx.
That is not
yes,
what
you
I
were
said.
Like, I did the real TED.
I,
you did
no,
TEDx.
I didn't. Okay. You are the worst. She's always doing this. It's terrible. I love TEDx, okay? I'm not upset at X of TED.
So allow me to introduce the softly spoken Antoinette Latouf, TEDx speaker.
So a little clip from last week's episode, for those who've been listening, has been doing the rounds on social media. We were talking about conflict resolution. And Azur takes a swipe at me saying that I shouldn't give tips because I'm not very good at de-escalating and that I just blow things up.
I mean, swipe feels... That feels strong.
So immediately I thought, blow things up. Yeah. Terrorism.
And I didn't, that's not what I didn't
that's
say.
That's a swipe that. At me being Arab.
I didn't, Arab, you too. And if you saw the clip, I was shocked. And it is hard to render me speechless. And I was like, I have to go. I can't be here with you. You're not about to take me out. Absolutely not.
So that moment was in jest, but it is a cute little segue into discussing racial stereotypes and terrorism. Especially in light of today's conference and in light... Oh, look, everything just gone.
Because you said cute.
Yeah,
and
it's
then
a cute little segue.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
And it's like when you place these things together, I just have questions.
Well, in light of the two recent stabbing attacks, what is terrorism? Who does it apply to? So if someone is targeting a specific group of people, isn't that terrorism? Why does it matter whether they were basing that on gender or religion? Is misogyny not terrorism? Are white killers unfairly accorded the benefit of lone wolf status? This is what we are going to be unpacking and debating today.
It has been really interesting to kind of watch from an American perspective the reaction and the coverage on these most recent tragic events and how these kinds of tragedies get labeled. It's been an observation of mine that there's a lot of probably discord, but also love or fan kind of like pandering around American culture. You know, I see it a lot in the brands and like different, you know, styles. And I just wanted to say that like Australia tends to like some strange American things. And so when I saw those two incidents back to back, I was like, this is not the thing that I want to see translated here. This is not something I want to see carry over. It has been incredibly disturbing.
Well, I think it was fair to say that straight away, particularly after Bondi as that was unfolding, people wanted to quickly know, me included, who is the person? What was the motive? And it's how we've really been conditioned to react to events like, was it terrorism? Like, I've even found myself, you know, I worked as a crime reporter and I worked in commercial TV for many years. So I was like, oh, who is it? What was their ideology? Like, it was still unfolding. People were still in lockdown. And of course, Twitter, now X, was awash with really lovely suggestions. And this is what some of the people, as I was just like sharing what was happening, there is a lockdown, reports of this, purely factual. These are some of the responses I got. It was your Palestinian mates. Looks like it's one of your cousins. Import muzzers and this is what you get. I wonder if it's one of your friends. Benjamin Cohen was in there, poor Benjamin, wrongly named. It was one of yours again. Terrorist, all the connotations, all the suggestions was that it was a terrorist and that it was someone who was of a Middle Eastern background, presumably my cousin. There was a huge amount of relief when the identity was revealed, because all of a sudden we're like, it is not one of my cousins. Thank God for that. But also the fact that all of a sudden it wasn't terrorism.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to...
It's like, he's from Toowoomba, that settles it.
Yes.
Not terrorism. Investigation concluded. We will hold a press conference.
So you don't want to, you're just going to put that out there. So you're drawing a direct line between Toowoomba and terrorism?
Well, no, I'm just saying we could rule it out.
Oh.
Well, that's what the authorities did in the media. We're like, phew, it's just from Toowoomba. We're good guys.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it does stand to, I guess a defining moment for me was being in the States when Sandy Hook happened. You remember the massive shooting in Connecticut, and it was a very wealthy, affluent area, and I saw that, you know, there weren't many children of color, if any, at that school, and I thought to myself, well, this would be the line when the U.S. finally decides to get its gun laws together, and we're finally going to, you know, act like we have a modicum of sense. And then nothing happened, and then it all became about Adam Lanza not having enough one-on-one time with his parents, you know, he didn't have a lot of friends, and that's why it's all okay. And I was very shocked to see how fast that happened here as well, where it was like immediately mental health.
And then just days later, it was immediately the 16-year-old was terrorism.
Right,
and
right.
Have you seen that color chart meme that goes around? It'd be hilarious if it weren't also kind of true, where it's like, it's a color chart and based on skin color, and up the top it's like lone wolf, mental health, can't get a girlfriend. And then the darker the skin goes, it's terrorism.
Right.
And, you know, and that gets thrown around the internet quite a lot.
Right.
And in this instance, I was like, damn.
Yeah, it's hectic. I mean, it really is, because it does stand to be questioned or explored why then it's permissible to walk in and commit such a heinous crime, and people are like, oh, you're unsettled. I mean, I'm unsettled all the time. You know unsettled. You are also...
You unsettle me.
You are the most unsettled of the two of us. So, however, you know, I'm proud to say you have not lost your mind entirely, you know, and decided to take action that is not great, because you definitely would not get the pass that said it was your mental health. I mean, Princess Jasmine commits massive, you know, that would be wild. That would be so insane. That would be crazy. And you would have to walk around, sing the song, and tell everybody it was okay. You know, it would be really hectic.
That is the first time I have heard terrorism in an Aladdin analogy. But, you know, like...
And you're welcome.
Yeah.
That's just me trying to make it accessible. Yeah. Because I, you know, DEI
it's
is
like
for everybody.
How you teach terrorism.
That's what I'm talking about. You just put it in the Disney movies.
Yeah, what? So terrorism defies definition and defies Disney. But we all know, I mean, there's this saying that I ripped off somewhere. I'm going to claim it as mine. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Or in some cases, one man's terrorist is another recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Or
oh, you like that.
Yeah, they did.
But there is a definition of terrorism in Australia, and the legal definition of terrorism under Australian law It's defined as an act or threat that is intended to advance a political, ideological, or religious cause, coerce, or intimidate an Australian or foreign government, and the conduct falls within the definition of causing serious physical harm to a person, causing death or endangering life, create a serious risk to the health and safety to the public. So that's the definition of terrorism, but along the way, it was weaponized and politicized, and the way it's used in the media has come to be synonymous. Because when you look at that definition, it doesn't say anything. It doesn't say this. It's connected to a race or it's connected to a region.
They couldn't say that. Why would what? Then all of the minority claims would be, you know, valid. So
explicit.
Yeah. I mean, it isn't. It's not lost, I think, on anyone, whether they decide to admit that openly or not, that there is a very, very strong line and very definition of know your place when it comes to criminality.
Yes.
There is a really specific way that we as a global culture identify then what's dangerous versus
Well, I'm going to blame your mob because it was George W. Bush and the war on terror.
Why? He's not my mom. I can't.
More yours than mine.
More yours
than mine.
I don't hang out with people who are like, it's okay, you're my first cousin, let's get married anyway. Like, that's not my gen. Like, you're not about to play me.
All right. Well, on George W. Bush, post September 11th, it was when the war on terror and the axes of evil and.
What was that voice? What was that?
I mean, like, I was trying to be a Fox News person, but I didn't quite get the accent right. But I was angry. So, and it's in those last 20 years that we have really continued to reiterate, despite what the facts say, despite the fact that in the United States most domestic terrorism have been carried out by white men, despite the fact that ASIO came out in 2021 and said that 50% of its caseload is now far-right extremism. An interesting thing they did do, though, because they were calling it Islamic extremism and far-right extremism, and then their far-right extremism caseload got really big and a big problem. They're like, we're not going to call it far-right anymore. And it was under coalition government when that happened. I'm told they're separate things, but I was like, is it upsetting the coalition voter base to be like far-right extremism and we are a, you know, increasingly populist right government? And so they were like, we're just going to call it ideological extremism, guys. Sorry, Muslim community, for the past 20 years, soz. We're just now awkward. Oh, we're no longer calling it far-right extremism. We're calling it ideologically motivated extremism. And I think that matters because language matters. Because for 20 years, we heard Islamic extremism, Islamic extremism. And that's why I think the masses are so quick to accept rather than interrogate when the police commissioner stands up within hours. The Wakeley stabbing attack within hours, and he's a teenager, and says, "This is an act of terrorism." I was like, just didn't want to sleep on it, didn't want to spend a bit more time,
but I mean,
didn't want to explore that he too has mental health issues.
Yeah, but that, I mean, saying it's an act of terrorism, that's not to be refuted. It was.
Well, but in the same breath, or just moments earlier, the Bondi attack wasn't considered a terrorist act under. In that it wasn't going to be pursued within the law,
but
as
like,
an act of terrorism.
Like, what are you hoping to, like, A, you know, not that I don't think the conversation needs to be discussed, but B, like, I always find that these conversations are happening in the wrong rooms. Like, everybody in here is well aware that, like, we have a massive problem. Like, I mean...
So do we just accept it?
What do you want? Well, like, what's the plan?
You just want me to, like, dismantle structural racism and the weaponization of terrorism
on
this podcast.
I
mean, there are a few scholars in here who are probably better equipped to do it than I am.
What are we going to
do?
Yeah.
I think we need to review our anti-terror laws. We have the most terror laws in the world. I think it was 96 at one point, terror laws that were enacted after September 11. Are we safer? Are we examining their overreach, the fact that you can detain a 14-year-old, or you can, without charges, or you can make people wear ankle bracelets, and, you know, to be monitored, and they haven't actually been, like, there's so much overreach, and we're just like, well, there's always a war on terror, and so, examining that, one, holding the media accountable for its role in perpetuating stereotypes about terrorism. I was working in a television newsroom when the Christchurch terror attacks happened. And I remember it was live streamed, we're trying to respond to it. The reticence and the reluctance among my peers, my seniors, to call it terrorism, I was like, there's a manifesto, he's live streaming it. Yeah. And it's like, oh yes, but we're not sure. And then very soon after, Fraser Anning, a Nationals MP, tweeted something, and I've got a copy of it, the most horrible thing, kind of like what the Australian article, an Australian editorial, saying, oh, this is what happens when we have too much immigration. It's like, how? Like, weaponizing tragedy against the victims. Then, only to correct Fraser Anning, did Scott Morrison come out and was like, this is an act of terror. Don't listen to this guy. I mean, he's part of my coalition. Don't listen to him. Yes, this is terrorism. And then all of a sudden, it was terrorism, but only for a moment. Because very soon, the next day, the front page of a tabloid newspaper was like, how did the toddler with the blue eyes and the curly blonde hair, I was like, I'm pretty sure his victims don't care that his hair was curly as a toddler. I'm not sure how that is relevant. And then if you compare that coverage, when the perpetrator of terrorism is Middle Eastern or Muslim, it's like, maniac, monster. And there was so much sympathetic coverage towards Brenton Tarrant. It was like, well, his dad had a heart attack when he was 17, and he was a good personal trainer. He made people do lots of lunges. And it's like, oh, incredibly relevant, thank you. And the amount of time and energy spent humanizing, and he could just be one of us, it was just appalling. And another time, there was a Queensland terror charge, and we were doing something, and my editor is looking at my script, and he was like, oh, and terrorist, I don't know, a very Anglo name, I'm going to call him David Smith. Terrorist David Smith. And he's like, that doesn't sound like a terrorist. And I said, do you want me to tell you what you sound like? And then...
Did he say yes?
He didn't, but he didn't say yes, but I proceeded to tell him what I thought he sounded like.
I'm and sure no
we
one
don't have a fabulous is, relationship
I'm sure everyone
anymore.
Assumed you did. You told him.
But these are the sorts of things that when terrorism and who it applies to is weaponized and politicized and gobbled up by our media and regurgitated, that even me, with all of my anti-racism thinking and my ancestry and everything, I thought, is this terrorism? He's got a beard. Guy with the jersey. People are like, he's got a beard! He's got a beard! I'm like, newsflash.
Yep.
Lots of hipsters have beards. Even though I'm so conscious of it, I felt myself do it. That's how conditioned we are.
But I don't necessarily know that that's conditioning so much as it's systemic oppression and internalized oppression. I have a tough time figuring out how to navigate the conversations, because you would have to dismantle from such a high level. It's not me accepting that, but it lessens the shock. And to be relieved that it's not one of yours, we all go through that. Every time something happens in the States, there is an entire caucus of like, God, please don't let him be black. Like, oh, that would be so much better if he's not, oh, he's black. Oh.
And there will be obviously instances where they are black.
Sure.
Or they are
sure.
Arab or they are Muslim. What's different in the conversation that ensues is the sense that the entire community will be punished for it. When the perpetrator is of a different background, it's just like, well...
Yeah, we immediately go to the fact that like they're not as adjusted.
We start looking at their personal lives and going, oh well, did it a little bit tough, and isn't that a lovely little anomaly, or is this a lone wolf attack?
But they do the same thing. Case in point, Trayvon Martin, when he was gunned down by George Zimmerman, they ran one photo of him kind of scowling. None of the photos of him smiling. Mm. None of the stories of which he was helpful in his community. They go and they find the one thing that he did as a preteen. And they were like, and when he was 8, we talked to his teacher and she said he was combative. And I'm like, I mean,
yeah,
that's not a good profile at all.
Yeah.
But so they are constantly looking to either humanize or dehumanize.
Unless it's a white person, in which it starts to make people incredibly uncomfortable. And I've long been advocating for newsrooms to be more diverse. I can see the discomfort in newsroom leaders and journalists reckoning with the fact that this was committed by someone like them, someone that looks like them. And you see the turmoil. I'm like, welcome to discomfort. I quite enjoy witnessing it.
You would be saying that. You're like, how do you like that, Sam? That's weird, isn't it?
It's also the damage that happens to communities that are then treated as though we expect this of you.
Sure.
It has massive ramifications on social cohesion. And then police profiling, the media stereotyping, and then it feeds into this loop. And we know the more people most likely to be radicalized are vulnerable teenage boys,
sure,
which is what we're seeing in the incel and far right community. But we just spent so much less time talking about white supremacy. Not we're not allowed to say white supremacy or far right. We would say ideologically motivated extremism. We're even just like adding so many words that it's actually confusing what we're talking about.
Sure, people
are like,
sure. For the premise of our show around disagreement, this is definitely not something we disagree about. So that feels weird.
You're a little bit like, well, we know it's a bad idea. We know it's terrible. We know it happens.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, not good enough. We need to challenge power structures. We need
if the goal is to just be so tired because you actually can't disrupt it, you continue to battle this with me.
I disagree that you can't disrupt it. There are levers you can pull. You can't completely.
Who's a lever? What's a lever?
Like there are mechanisms. There's the law.
You mean like a lever?
Sure. The way it is defined, the way we talk about it, the way it is prosecuted, there are things that we can do. I mean, the other argument is.
Yes, are you arguing with yourself?
Yes. You were like, there's not enough conflict. I was like, I'm going to have conflict with myself.
Yeah, you do.
Is the argument that the definition of terrorism works and it was designed this way. It's fit for purpose, for the goal, for Australia and its allies and the proxy wars overseas and the treatment of marginalised minoritized groups in Australia. So that it's actually working. It's not a design flaw. It's working as intended.
It's everything about the quote system. Like the common thread is that the system is broken. And I refute that 100% because the system was designed impeccably to scale. It is the oldest system in the world.
You're agreeing with me again.
Oh. But it's like it's a scalable model because not only is it kept going by a supremacist structure, but it is fueled by internalized oppression from minority and marginalized groups. So I don't believe that it's one thing. I believe that we have something that is so ingrained in our society. Not only do the people that benefit from it keep it going, the people that don't benefit from it continue to move it along as well. You know, there's no space where those that are oppressed have been encouraged to come together. This conference is the first time that this has happened. We should not need a conference for this, but I'm so thrilled that we're doing it. So if we're really talking about a disruption or you're talking about wanting to see syntax and vernacular change, like that's great. It does not shift a system that actually told you don't belong here. The system, the structure itself, says you may come only this far. And if you come this far, you will be held to these ideals. But sure, equity, equality, the whole bit. They don't want that. So we don't have it. And then we as marginalized people believe we don't deserve it. So we're constantly then imploring ourselves and just so tired. Like what happened to you is a perfect example. You've been hell-raising since. You've been standing for justice, doing the thing, and look at the fallout. Look at it. Look at the fallout. So is that a win? Is that a win that they have broken you down so far that you're just like, what do I do today? How do I fight this today? This isn't a problem you caused.
Just to clarify in the room, I'm like not facing terrorism charges or anything. I still don't want, like, she's made the backpack comment last episode. Now she's like drawing comparison with me.
I would not say anything about a backpack. If anybody listened to it, yeah. She said the backpack. I would have never said that.
You just said you'd be going in and blowing stuff up.
Which I didn't mean like that.
Yeah. George W. Bush did that too.
I don't even see color.
So you are monocultural.
I identify as a monocultural individual. Hell, I'm the majority. You know what I'm saying? Man, that's what I'm saying.
So let's talk about incels and misogyny as a form of terrorism. Because
it's something lighter to move against along of that for us.
In the past 20 odd days, 9 women have been killed at the hands of male violence, and it's gotten a lot of people asking the question, and I think rightly so, is this not ideologically inspired terrorism? At what point do we look at incels, the sort of far-right radicalization, where a lot of the information that's coming to surface, this ingrained misogyny. Why aren't we more angry about that? Why aren't we labeling that terrorism?
There's an opportunity and an obligation to get some answers as to how this continues to perpetuate, how it continues to occur.
I think there are a lot of people having conversations around Australia who are rightly outraged and worried about domestic violence and women not being safe, and thinking, well, we're having the same conversations, things aren't changing. Maybe we need to look at things and approach it differently. So in Canada late last year, there was a landmark case. There was an incel who murdered a woman, and he was convicted as a terrorist. But I wonder whether that's something, you know, whether Australia can do the same. Like, could treating these far-right subcultures as terrorist movements help reduce violence against women? Because we know what we're doing isn't working, because it's pervasive, not stopping, it's not shifting.
But what makes you think that labeling or redistributing language and definition around terrorism is our next step?
Because we're so terrified of terrorism, we start to pay attention about terrorism. People would start dobbing their neighbours in. Like,
you think so?
I mean, in Australia they did. We were on be alert, not alarmed, which really meant be alarmed and alarmed. Now, some argue that Australia's legal definition is broad enough to be used in convicting misogyny-driven incels. There are criminologists mounting that argument.
But you legit think that, like, so we redefine terrorism and then people are going to start paying attention?
I think it would help Islamophobia.
Maybe.
I think it would potentially help social cohesion to not blame, despite what the facts and the trends show, blame a religion and a community and treat them with suspicion and disdain and open contempt in the media.
What do you mean redefining? And then where are we going to go? Once we have the definition right, I believe that you believe that people are better than they are, which is what makes you so fucking awesome as a journalist. But it also...
A compliment. Don't start.
I let it out. I'm tired.
Right. Did you get that? You got that?
I'm already
got
that. Jet lagged. Yeah. There's levers everywhere. I didn't get afternoon tea in the Argo. You know, I love her. We gotta take her on the tour. This is great. Absolutely.
So in conclusion. Unfortunately, on this podcast, we could not solve terrorism.
We did.
We are high achievers.
We are.
TEDx.
TEDx. You were.
Maybe once I do my TED talk, we could have solved terrorism.
This is inappropriate. That's okay. I just would like to say on the record, I did not say anything about a backpack. She said that. Right?
Thank you so much for listening to the Antoinette.
I appreciate that. All right. Wait, before we go, we need to make sure.
Yes.
You have to take your phones out.
Follow the Antoinettes. Spotify, Apple.
Follow us.
It is a shit show out there.
It is. It is a shit show.
And we are here to
talk about
and be
that
completely inappropriate about
entirely
it.
Entirely.
Yeah.
Without backpacks. Yep. Yay. Yeah. Thank you so much, y'all. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
So that was fun.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was something we should definitely do more.
And you're a lot happier these days, Azor, because
Bella's home. She's the best. She's so cute.
So for those who haven't been following Bella and Azor's journey, firstly, how dare you go back and listen to our
honestly
standing room only episode,
yes,
Traveling with Disability. But you're now, after 2 odd years, reunited with Bella.
Yes, and it has been actually the most fantastic reunion. She has been such an integral part of my journey, traveling, you know, the really hard road of multiple sclerosis. It's been really awesome to have her home, and she doesn't know that any time has passed, which is also hysterical. So she is exactly as I remember her.
Thanks so much for the love and support and for also getting behind the hashtag Free Bella and Fuck Johnny Depp. We love
yes.
that. And we also love that you have shared your experiences of traveling with disability. Zoe Simmons has sent through her experience of traveling with a disability.
Hey Antoinettes, my name is Zoe Simmons. I'm a disabled journalist and disability advocate. And boy, do I have a disability travel horror story for you. I was flying back from Sydney after filming an episode of SBS Insight when Qantas broke my wheelchair. They said a broken brake was just minor damage and wouldn't fix it, refusing me twice. I hope they don't think broken plane brakes are minor. Now, issues like this are quite common for mobility aid users because our mobility aids are considered luggage, despite the fact that they are our legs. So that's really awful. Could you imagine if, as a non-disabled person, you risked breaking your legs every time you flew? No. It wasn't until my story went viral that Qantas changed their tune and said they'd help. But so many people never get help. I actually spoke to the Disability Royal Commission about this and have written so many articles, and it's just... it's awful. The system is broken. We need to keep talking about this and create change because disabled people deserve better.
That is absolutely abhorrent. And I think the way that you were able to articulate and make that analogy, like that is the way in which so many of us get around or buy these aids. So when you entrust them to be stored or whatever it is so that we can get from one place to the next, you don't then think they will be damaged and then people will tell you like it's not a big deal. So thank you for your insight.
Hi, thanks again for doing this episode despite the crappy circumstances. But I appreciate the rawness and the realness in sharing what happened and how so many people with disability experience similar situations. So thank you. My name is Chrissy and I'm a psychologist and PhD candidate. I have a disability myself. I'm legally blind and I also have a guide dog. Also speaking to the differences between Australia and overseas, it almost seems like in the US and the UK, accessibility is kind of just normal. It's we make things accessible, we try and do better, whereas here it's still seen as a almost like we're being done a favor if we're disabled and we're having things made accessible for us.
Thank you for being able to boil that down to maybe a way that made it feel more accessible for those that don't have accessibility issues.
Dear Antoinettes, my name is Eliza Hull and I have a disability called Charcot-Marie-Tooth. It's a neurological condition. It means that I walk differently, fall over, have low muscle tone and can't get upstairs, especially if there is no railing. My travel fail is I just recently went to Thailand for a wedding and the hotel had multiple stairs to get anywhere, to get to breakfast, to get to the swimming pool, to get even out or in the hotel, multiple stairs without railing. And so I had to have my partner help me get around wherever I went. I couldn't go anywhere on my own. On the last day, the hotel owner, as we were packing our bags, said, just wanted to let you know there's actually an accessible area right at the back of the hotel that links all of the spaces together without stairs. It's like, oh, too late.
Thanks so much, Eliza, for sharing. I was a little bit confused about that because there was an accessibility
route. It's, was it just that it was buried?
Yes, it's that it's buried. It's all the way in the back. It links it together. What do you see when you walk in? Stairs everywhere.
Yeah.
And is someone there then noticing quietly and respectfully with dignity that she may need some assistance in helping to escort her back there? No.
No, I think the
of course not.
No. Yeah.
Of course not. Yeah.
Thank you so much again, Eliza, Zoe, and Chrissy. That is it for this week from the Antoinettes. We've loved hearing from you. We read all of your messages, all of your reviews, so keep them coming. And if you want more from us, you can subscribe to our brand new newsletter. Check the show notes for that. It's a shit show out there, guys. Stay safe. Catch you next Thursday.
See you soon.